This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
And I'm Bill Cloud, I'm Assistant Chief Medical Officer at Baptist.
Well, folks, we have a wonderful guest today. We have Jeff Wetzler, and he has a new book out that you've probably heard about all over LinkedIn called Ask. And I love the subtitles, too. It says, tap into the hidden wisdom of people around you for unexpected breakthroughs in leadership and in life. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. If you would tell our audience a little bit about yourself and about your background.
Absolutely. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me. I am based in New York, and I have spent my career really focused on the question of how do we unlock learning? How do we help people grow to be their best? And that has taken me on a path that has toggled back and forth between the world of business kinds of organizations and education kinds of organizations. And the common through line is this idea that all of us are surrounded by people, whether you are a manager, a solo contributor, a doctor, whoever, all of us are surrounded by people who've got insights and ideas and perspectives and feedback that if we could tap into, we would all be better off together. We'd make better decisions together. We would improve better. We'd innovate all better relationships, all those kinds of things. And so my career started in the world of management consulting, where I was really initially exposed to a lot of these ideas, first through a mentor of mine named Chris Argyris, who is one of the pioneers of the field of organizational learning, and then through a number of other mentors. And I spent about a decade taking in these ideas, having the chance to teach them around the world to consultants and clients, and just see in many ways the life-changing impact that these ideas have had on people, not just professionally, but also in their marriages and in their home lives and friendships and so on. About a decade in, I was recruited by one of my clients, which was an organization called Teach for America, to become their chief learning officer, essentially to be responsible for the training and support of thousands of teachers across the country, which to me really put this to the test in my own work as an operating leader. It was deeply humbling. I made a number of mistakes and saw some of the limitations of trying to put these ideas into practice and needed to round them out and add to them, especially as I was working in very diverse settings on many different dimensions. So I did that for about a decade. And then for the past 10 years or so, have been running an organization that I co-founded called Transcend, which is an innovation organization. And last year, I stepped down as co-CEO and am continuing to launch some new ventures with Transcend, but also bring this book Ask to the world, which is a message I'm very passionate about.
Jeff, that's really exciting. We appreciate you being on Connecting the Dots today. And there's a lot to learn from this. You know, I often say that, you know, healthcare is unique in that we are surrounded by people that are all extremely intelligent. And, you know, you got these folks at many degrees which require doctorate level education today all over our organizations. And it's really, I don't see us ever tapping into that potential as much as we should. So I think I really love hearing about more about Ask today, your book, but also I would love to spend some time talking about your background. And so maybe we can jump in with some of that Teach for America experience. Teach for America is an organization I've always really respected. I think that's incredible work. Tell us about some of the learnings and kind of how it led you to Ask.
Absolutely. So for those of you who don't know, Teach for America is a national nonprofit in the United States. It's actually been replicated in 60 other countries around the world now as well. So it's a global phenomenon. And what it essentially is doing is trying to ensure that every young person in this country gets an excellent education by enlisting recent college graduates, primarily, although also some mid-career changers, in the effort to do that. And they make a commitment to teach for at least 2 years, typically in an under-resourced school, in a challenging environment, and do everything they can. And Teach for America does everything it can to train and support them to help those young people have a better education. But the second part of its mission is that after those 2 years, whether they stay in the classroom or become school principals or become doctors or become lawyers or whatever they do, their lives have forever been changed by the experience they've had working so closely with young people and their families and their communities. So they see firsthand what needs to happen so that everyone can get an excellent education. My own experience was being responsible for the training and the support of these teachers across the country. And I brought experience in management and in adult learning and combined that with my team's experience in K-12 pedagogy and instruction and curriculum and those kinds of things, and joined Teach for America at a time of incredibly rapid growth. So we were nearly doubling in size year on year for quite a number of years, while also trying to maintain and improve quality. So trying to bring in some of that continuous improvement stuff. And I mean, we can spend the entire time talking about the lessons learned, but I'll say one of the lessons that I learned that really did inform the book Ask is that as a new manager, I was expecting that when something was about to go wrong, people would tell me. I would check in with them. I would let them know, hey, I'm here to help. But in certain cases, I didn't find out until nearly too late. And I had to ask myself the hard question, what was I failing to do as a leader to create conditions where people didn't actually feel safe letting me know there was an error or there was a worry or there's a tension or something going off track? And I learned a lot about the power of my position. I learned a lot about the ways in which operating across lines of difference on any dimension can reduce people's sense of safety. But I also learned a lot about what to do about that as well. I mean, it forever changed me, even while it was deeply humbling at the same time. And that pushed me to add some of those dimensions into the book Ask as well.
Great answer. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Jeff, if you don't mind, you want to talk about some of those ways that you can encourage people to ask them up with problems?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a part in the book that I call Make It Safe, which is a recognition that if you're going to ask someone a question, the only way you're going to get an honest answer out of them is if they feel safe enough to tell you the answer. And so, you know, there were several big lessons that I learned. One of them is probably, you know, very simply the lesson of connection. If people are going to be honest with you, they need to feel a sense of personal connection to you. And the best time to create that connection is not when you need it, but it's well before you need that connection. And so it led me to get out of my office, get away from my desk, have a lot of coffees, have a lot of walks, have a lot of meals with people, share more about myself personally, get to know them as people, and just build a level of connection that was far greater than I initially anticipated would be necessary for us to have an honest relationship with each other. The second thing was, if I wanted people to open up with me and let me know what they needed, what their struggles were, as the leader, I needed to do that first. I needed to actually say to them, here's why I'm coming to you. Here's what I'm wrestling with. Here's what I'm not good enough yet at. And that goes against a lot of the messages that we as leaders get sent, which is, you know, you're supposed to be the one in charge. You're supposed to have it all together. You're supposed to look confident. And while there's some truth to some of that, people want to know that you're a person just like them. And so the more that I can open up, the better the better they're going to feel. And then the last one I'll just say is, I've discovered people are constantly trying to gauge how resilient are you when they tell you a hard truth. Are you going to flip out? Are you going to crumble? Are you going to punish them? Are you going to, you know, whatever it is. And so I learned that leaders need to radiate resilience if they want the truth from people. That doesn't mean they can't have reactions, but it means that they don't hold other people responsible for their reactions. They take responsibility. They may say things like, that was really hard to hear, and I'm really glad you told me, because now we can do something about it. And so the more that I can also let people know I can handle your truth, even if it's a tough stuff that we're going to need to work through together, the safer they're going to feel to share that with me as well.
Yeah, I really like that one. I want to go back and kind of unpack all three. I mean, we call this podcast Connecting the Dots, because one of the things I'm learning, Jeff, is we talk to guys like you that are way smarter than I am, that have written on this topic, but we are sharing and we have similar kind of solution sets for some of these issues. But there, it's fun to hear you articulate kind of what your research is and how it's kind of led to what you've put in your book. And so I love connection. I love the personal connection. We've kind of called that, you know, Skip mentioned Edgar Schein and some of the work with Dr. Schein, but level two relationships. It's really past that transactional relationship to more of a personal connection. So important in what we do and how we create those relationships. And then I love the, you know, humility is one of our principles. Talk about humility and being vulnerable with our teams, because it really takes that for them to be able to open up and feel safe, to be able to share appropriately in order that we can kind of get the results and the sustainability that we need. I like the gauging or radiating resilience, you know, gauging resilience and then radiating resilience. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about that one, and I love that. I think resilience, we learned a lot about it in the pandemic, through the pandemic, about the resilience of our teams and how we can empower resilience, but radiating resilience to create safety. I love that concept.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Jeff, one of the other things that I really loved about your book is this concept of hidden wisdom. Will you unpack that a little bit for us?
Absolutely. So this is the idea that the answers to our toughest challenges are typically right under our nose. They typically live in the heads of the people around us, but far too often we don't find out those things. And so part of what I researched in the book is, what are the things that people don't find out typically as leaders? Incidentally, one of the pieces of research I came across from the book had to do with the field of medicine. There was one study that said 60 to 80% of patients have admitted that they have held something back from their doctor that would be important for their doctor to know. Whether that's, you know, I'm not taking those drugs you think I am, or I'm not exercising the way you think I am, or any things about my lifestyle or things like that. And I think to myself, you know, if people are withholding things that could be material to their own health, to their own, for maybe life and death, how prevalent must this be? So one of the things I looked into, what are the top things that people tend to be withholding from one another? One of them is the struggles that they're facing, the real challenges, what they're really up against in life, what's really hard. And this is what a lot of my team at Teach for America, when I wasn't finding out things, might have been withholding from me, not because it was their fault, but because I wasn't creating the right conditions for them to do that. Second thing is, what's really behind the behavior and choices that they're making? What's really behind the views that they have? Oftentimes we see what's on the surface, but usually there's some life experience there. There's some deeper reason why they're resisting. There's some deeper reason why they're pushing you in a certain direction, why they believe what they do. And that's not something that we usually find out on the surface. Third thing is, people have feedback for us as leaders. They have observations. They see what we could do better. Yet often we don't actually ever find that out from one another. It's so often I'll talk to, you know, one leader on a team or another, and they have all kinds of observations for the other ones. And I'll say, have you ever said that to them? And they say, no, why would I say that to them? And I'll say, well, if they had that about you, would you want to find that out? And of course they would, but we don't say that to each other. So the third thing is kind of feedback, perspectives, observations. And then the last one is just, you know, bold ideas. People have thoughts about, this could be done better this way. We could make a pivot. We could try this kind of thing. But often people are thinking, this sounds too crazy. This not, you know, they don't want my idea. So, you know, when you put those four things together, you know, what are their challenges? And what are their real reasons for their behavior and actions? What is the feedback that they have for one another? And what are their best ideas? I mean, I look at that, I'm like, that is a treasure trove of hidden insight, hidden wisdom that we are all surrounded by. What would be possible if we could hear that from one another? How much better would we do? Would we perform? Would we relate to one another if we could only tap into that?
Yeah, really powerful, right? And so I'm curious if you will share some of the, what have you seen from teams that are able to unlock this hidden wisdom?
Yeah, and so this is essentially kind of the core question that the book tackles, which is, how do we unlock this hidden wisdom? And there's five practices that I've seen. I put them together. I call it the ASK approach. Every single one of them will make a difference on its own. But when you put them together, I think that is the superpower of unlocking this hidden wisdom. And the first one is called choose curiosity. And so leaders and teams that do better at this are intentionally curious about what they can actually learn from one another. And I don't look at curiosity as a trait that some people have and other people are doomed never to have. I don't look at it as a state of mind that we're stuck in. I really do look at it as a choice, as a decision that's always available to us. It's not a mood, it's a move we can make. And when we're truly curious, we really center ourselves in every interaction on one single question. And that the question is simply, what can I learn from this person?
Yeah.
You know, whether they agree with me or disagree with me, whether I think they're right, whether I think they're wrong, whether they're my subordinate, whether I report to them, whether it's my customer, patient, whatever it is, the most curious people are saying, there's something I can learn. There's something important I can learn from every single person. And so there's a lot more to say about how to choose curiosity, but at its essence, it's really centering on this intention of, what can I learn from you?
I love the idea of a move, not a mood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that we can really, it's a choice that we can make really every day.
With it's every always available. Yes, yes.
Always available. I love that.
Yeah. So that's one practice, choosing curiosity. The second one we touched on a little bit, which is making it safe. So they are intentionally taking steps to create that connection, to open up, to radiate resilience, to lower the barriers. And you know, one of the contributors to this book was Professor Amy Edmondson, who, along with Edgar Schein, actually, you know, really pioneered the idea of psychological safety. And she encouraged me to remind people, it's never going to be fully safe. So the best we can do is make it safer. There's always going to be some amount of, you know, hesitation, but the more that we can reduce it, the more that we can make it more comfortable, more easier, more appealing, the more likely it is people are going to share what they have to say. So making it safe is the second practice. Third one is the heart of the ask approach, and it's called pose quality questions. And this is a recognition that the quality of your questions determines the quality of the information you get back. And, you know, we've all, you know, been in conversations our whole life. We say things, we ask questions, but how many of us have actually been trained? Here are different questions that you can ask depending on what you're trying to get at. I mean, Dr. Cloud, I assume as a surgeon, you're trained on, if you want to, you know, use this tool, gets you this thing, this, you know, this instrument gets you this thing, et cetera. It's the same thing with questions. Different questions will get different types of information.
Yeah, Jeff, I think it's important that let's camp here for a minute, because I think that, to me, this begins to fall apart here. I think personally, I'm not that good at asking the right questions. My wife is very good at it and is kind of trained in it and is, you know, it's like, why didn't I think of phrasing it that way? So there's a lot to learn from her on that end. And we all have those people in our lives that are good at asking the right questions that are really make you want to respond. But how do we practice that? How do we intentionally get better at that skill?
Yeah. So the way I look at it is it's really about how many different kinds of quality questions do you have in your repertoire or in your toolbox? In the book, I talk about 10 or 12 categories of quality questions to ask. And I think it's important to note, I'm not talking about 50 or 100 or 1,000. It's a relatively bounded set of kinds of questions that you can ask that I think is learnable for everyone. So I'll just give you one example. There's one category of questions, a strategy that I call request reactions. And requesting reactions is just very simply after you say something to someone, or you explain something to someone, or you make a request, or you give them feedback, you ask a question like, so what are your reactions to that? How does that strike you? How does that sit with you? How did that land for you? What does that make you think? Any one of those questions is a question that is designed to help you find out their thinking about your thinking, so that if they disagree with your thinking, or if they have a reaction to it, or if they see a flaw in your thinking, you're far more likely to find it out than if you don't ask that question, or than if you ask a question like, you know, what a typical one would be, you know, so does that make sense? Or something like that. So you want to be asking a question that really opens it up for what we call disconfirming information to come back into as well. And so that's just one, you know, one of about 10 categories of questions that is, I think, quite learnable for everybody.
Yeah, I love that. Bill, what do you think? I mean, do we do a good job at asking the right questions?
Well, I think, you know, HF and I have talked about this a lot, because when you're actually, you know, the way you learn how to take history and physicals from patients is very scripted, right? So you're trying to elicit a set of information, of data points. Okay, it's a very structured approach. And I think as you mature and you go through your career, you actually rethink that whole process, and you actually start off asking way more open questions at the beginning of the encounter with someone. And so I don't know if that's the same thing that you experience in the educational world or not, but that has tended to be the history.
Yeah, I do think that there is a tendency for people, whenever they're novices, to follow the script a little bit more. And then when you get comfortable, that you can begin to make it your own. But, you know, I think one of the most important things I heard you say is that as you get more experience and maybe more wisdom in the field, you recognize the value of starting more open, as opposed to starting with a more checklisty kinds of set of questions, because you know that you never know what's going to come at you. So you might as well open the aperture as wide as you can, so you can take in what's there.
Yeah, but Jeff, I want to take another. I think the opposite also happens in leadership, where you know you assume that you know what's going to happen in this set of circumstances, so you don't ask enough questions to see how this may be different or how this may land in a different spot. And I think leaders probably get a little over their skis in not asking the right questions to really get to a better answer for their team.
100%. I think leaders do that at their peril, It happens all the time. And that is why I come back to step one, which is choosing curiosity. Because I think for a leader to say, wait a minute, maybe it's not the way I thought it was going to be. Maybe there's a different pattern than I'm used to. Maybe maybe they know something I don't know. That's such an important reminder. And that's what allows us to then think about and have those questions naturally occur to us as well.
Yeah. And Jeff, I think Brad, Skip and I talk a lot about, what are we actually trying to accomplish as an organization? And if you ask that question, you'll ask broader questions. Like when we're going to make rounds, the tendency is to ask a data point, ask for information about a data point. And I think what we've gravitated towards is show us your thinking. I want to know how you're thinking about this. I don't really care so much about the data point. And I don't know if that is comparable to what you're experiencing in education.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that what I take from what you're saying is that, the data point will change situation to situation, but what's constant is how are we thinking about things? And if you ask a question just like, well, what's the data here? You're going to get the data on that one particular case of the situation. That may or may not be the most important thing in the story that's going on there. But if you say a question like, and there's another strategy of questions I talk about, which is dig deeper, dig into their thought process, then you're going to get at what's actually what they're bringing to every situation that they're going, and you can have a conversation about how are they thinking about it. So absolutely resonates.
Yeah, Jeff, we've also been kind of learning and studying about complexity, and the work of complexity in healthcare really resonates with our audience and with leaders that work in our organization, because we find these ambiguous kind of scenarios where it's hard to find what the right answer is. And so I think curiosity really plays in and couples well with complexity. I'm curious. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I totally agree. I mean, when you're dealing with a complex system, one of the things I think is that nobody can see the whole system, because right. Everyone's got touching a different point. And so if you want to get your arms around what's going on in this complex system, almost by definition, you've got to be curious about how is everybody seeing it from their angle of the system and ask them questions to elicit what they're seeing. And so I think in order to operate in a complex system, and I would offer now that we're not just dealing with complex systems, but complex and incredibly fast changing systems,
yes,
we have got to be seeing it from so many different vantage points. And I think that's where curiosity and making it safe to share and questions absolutely come in. Maybe I'll share with you the other two pieces.
Sure. Yeah, that's great.
So your original question. Number four, I call listen to learn. And this is just a recognition that once you ask the question, it all comes down to how well you listen to the answer. And listening to learn is not the same thing as listening to get out of there quickly or get the job done, or listening to look smart, or listening to be right, or listening to get them to do what you want,
or listening to speak next, or
listening to look like you're listening. None of that is listening to learn. I mean, listening to learn is just a deep, vigorous taking in of what the other person has to say. And, the research is very clear that we are all worse at listening than we think we are at listening. And so in this part of the book, I just talk about a number of strategies for how do we better listen to learn, not just listen to the facts that they have to say, but also to the emotions underneath it and to the behaviors that they're exhibiting at the same time. But, I can share a few of those if helpful.
Please do. And I think there's a great correlation. Listening to learn is, I mean, again, it fits well with that curiosity to me.
Yeah,
I mean, they just,
exactly.
It seems like they go together.
Yeah, all of these things, I think, really do fit together. I'll say three quick things about listening. One is just this acronym that I love. I didn't make it up, but I love it, which is just the acronym WAIT, WAIT. Why am I talking? And so it's just a reminder to myself, why am I talking right now? I just need to wait. And so often when you wait those extra 2 or 3 seconds, that's all it takes for someone to actually realize no, they really care. They're not going to cut me off. They're not going to change the subject. And people sometimes need a couple beats to realize that or to collect their thoughts. And so just the simplest thing is to wait. Second thing is I actually interviewed for the book professional question askers. So for example, I interviewed reporters, but I also interviewed psychotherapists. And one of the things that I heard universally from the psychotherapists was this phenomenon they call the doorknob moment. I don't know if this occurs in other branches of medicine, but what they would basically say is that if a psychotherapy session lasted for 50 minutes, typically at minute 49 and 55 seconds, right as it's about to end and the patient is walking out the door, they've got their hand on the doorknob, which is why they call it the doorknob. That's when they say the real thing. That's when they say the most important thing that they're concerned about. That's when they say, I'm thinking about leaving my spouse, or I just got fired, or whatever it is. And the psychotherapists are thinking, why did they not tell me this entire time? We could have been talking about it. And they have all kinds of theories as to why people don't say it. But the bottom line is they don't. So for us, I think as leaders, the takeaway is if you are having a conversation with someone and you ask them a question, the first answer to your question that they give you may not actually be the most important thing they have to say to your question. In fact, it might be hidden behind two or three layers. And the way that you get to those layers is what I just call pull the thread. Just keep pulling a little more, just to say that, okay, thank you, what else? Or just to say a little more about that, or tell me more, or keep going. Any number of those things, you just pull a little bit more, and that significantly increases the chances that you don't have to wait till they're walking out the door, and you can actually talk about the real thing.
So I like pull the thread a lot.
Yeah, just pull it off, pull that thread a little bit. And then the final thing for listening is a strategy that I think if you remember nothing else from this entire conversation, I would want people to remember, which is called tell back and test. And this is just simply when someone tells you something, before you respond, before you move on, just check if you understood them. Just to say, look, this is what I think I heard you saying. Let me just check. Did I get that right?
Hey, Bill, how about that? I mean, that's the old teach back. I mean, that's been around in healthcare forever.
It is. I mean, that just is, it's in the military, it's everywhere, where it's crucial communication. And if you treat things in a healthcare setting as routinely crucial, I think you tend to fall into that habit, where you want to, confirm, did I hear you right? Did you really say that? Because, sometimes when you just ask that, and Jeff, I don't know if you've seen this very frequently or not, just posing the question, is that what you meant to say? They'll take a beat back and rethink it, and they may come up with something different they're going to ask.
I would agree. I mean, this is why I think it's the magic move, because 50% of the time, if I say to someone, this is what I think I heard you say, is that right? Did I get that right? They will say, that's not exactly what I said, or that's not what I meant to say, or now that you say it back to me, I actually think, there's something else I want to tell you. And so you get more accurate information from people. But it has two other benefits. One of them is that if you're in a tense conversation, it will change the pace of the conversation. So if you're going back and forth and back and forth with someone, but then you, instead of just sending your next volley back over, you say, wait, I want to check if I got yours correct. It slows things down. It gives everyone a chance to take a breath, and that can make a huge difference. But I think the most important benefit is that it sends the message to the other person, I care about you.
Yeah.
I care enough about you and understanding where you're coming from to take my own time, my own words, my own breath to check if I get you. And that sends a message. And that message makes a big difference, I think, to the quality of the relationship as well. So if you take away nothing else, tell back and test your understanding with the other person. And then finally, just the last of the five practices of the ask approach. This one is actually my favorite of all five. It's called reflect and reconnect. And this is a recognition that really the learning that we get when we talk to someone else, after we've listened closely, after we've heard them, all comes down to how do we process what we heard from them. One of my favorite sayings from the world of education comes from John Dewey, who said, we don't learn from experience. We learn from reflecting on experience. It's the process of reflection, the meaning making, that's actually how we get the insights. And many of us we think we don't have time to reflect. We don't know how to reflect. But in the book, I try to make very simple. We can reflect by sifting through what we heard, turning it over our minds in a structured way, getting the right takeaways, and ultimately going back to the other person and saying, this is what I learned from you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for taking the risk, for the time. And is there anything more or different you'd be hoping I'd learn from you?
Man, I think that's a perfect ending to our time together, Jeff, because that, you know, reflection is something that we talk about a lot, and we've really tried to instill in our leaders to, you know, reflect about a conversation or what has happened, you know, what the things that we're working on, how do we reflect on those to inform our next steps? It's really, it's a great act of showing so many of our principles. And I love that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeff, this has been fantastic. I love the name of the book. I think it's so proactive versus the normal thing would be tell, right? Instead of tell, we're going to ask. And so I love the acronym WAIT. I wrote it down. I already have it up on my wall. You know, why am I talking? I love this. But the other thing that you gave me, just to give our listeners a little comic relief, is when you talked about the doorknob moment, my mind went to the movie What About Bob? And if you've ever seen the movie about What About Bob, hopefully it's putting a big smile on your face and it'll make sense. But Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today on Connecting the Dots podcast. And I hope that you'll consider coming back on again. We'd love to have you. And we really enjoyed this conversation. But on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank you so much. We appreciate the great work you're doing.
I appreciate you and your emphasis on learning and improvement. You don't always see that, and it's really just a joy to be with you.
Thank you so much.